now going to progress to some steps which are a bit more difficult.
Relax and enjoy yourself.
Ready, set, and begin.
There's something curious about this broadcast.
It is quite bad, but it is good for you.
On with the show!
You have got what appears to be a dynamite sound.
That's right.
Get me, little boy, from Cleveland, Ohio. Come to chase your women and drink your beer.
Now. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only
crazy
Frank.
Oh, yeah. Here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages. Crazy Frank Live. It is 7 p.m. Well, 7:02. 7:02 p.m. Central Standard Time. Local time here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, in the heart of the rock and roll, whatever. I don't know. The unlikeliest of places, let me tell you. I had never even heard of Sioux Falls, South Dakota before I had come. In fact, before I moved to South Dakota, I would have been hard-pressed to name a single city in this state, aside from Sturgis. You know what? Sturgis, South Dakota. I would have, if you'd said, what's the city that comes to mind when you think South Dakota? I would have said Sturgis. The Sturgis Motorcycle Rally every year draws, tens of thousands of motorcycle enthusiasts to the ass end of the, whatever the hell they call South Dakota. I guess I don't know what the motto for South Dakota is. I've lived here almost 10 years and still have no idea what the motto for the state is. Houses are expensive, but not as expensive as California. That just doesn't fit on a license plate, though. South Dakota motto. I think the license plate says something about great places and great faces or some shit like that. South Dakota motto is, under God, the people rule. Unless, of course, the governor doesn't like what the people vote for, in which case, they shoot it down. South Dakota's nickname here says the Mount Rushmore State. This story here from the Argus Leader says South Dakota's state nickname is boring. What would you change it to? South Dakota. Don't worry, it's supposed to smell that way. That's only if you're over here by the hog plant. We have a couple of hog processing facilities that let off a odoriferous emanation that doesn't, I'm kind of used to it, like whatever. I live downwind from the hog plant and incidentally, right in the approach pathway of one of the airport. So you got jets flying over and the stench of the hog plant rolling up the hill. And still the houses in my neighborhood sell for $200,000. Figure that out. But I guess in California it's way worse. I should count my blessings. Here we are. I would have been hard-pressed to name a single city aside from Sturgis, South Dakota, in South Dakota. And I got this gig at KBAD. Well, actually, I got a gig in Watertown. They offered me the gig, and I said, well, what about relocation? They're like, we're not going to pay you any relocation fees, because I was living in Cleveland at the time. And the job didn't pay shit. But here's the thing with radio, and what you find about radio people is radio people, the people who really do it long term, love it. They love it. So, I mean, I'll never forget the first time I got an actual paycheck for doing radio. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that they were paying me. It was very little. I mean, even back then. But I was like, you got to be kidding me. I can't believe I get paid to do this. You're actually going to pay me money to do this. This is crazy. And that's where, and I think that's to the benefit and the detriment of radio in general, that so many people who do this job love it so much that the pay is almost secondary. You don't feel bad. I guess I never did. When I had these radio gigs and I was surviving solely on the money I was making at commercial radio, not streaming, commercial radio. You know, you get paid just a little bit above minimum, whatever the current minimum wage is. And you're living, you're buying your groceries from the Dollar Tree. You're eating lots of ramen noodles and, you know, that sort of thing. Can you live off pork rinds? I'm here to tell you, you can. You can live off pork rinds. And never once did I think, man, I wish I had a bunch of money. Or man, all I kept thinking was, I got the coolest gig ever. I've always loved it. But, you know, there comes a time in a person's life when, you know, let's say for the sake of argument, you live in Cleveland, Ohio, and you have, you know, maybe $100 to your name, and somebody's offering you a job in the middle of nowhere, South Dakota, which is, I want to say it was seven or, well, I'll Google it. We'll ask the old Google Maps. Google Maps. Cleveland, Ohio. And we want driving directions from Watertown, South Dakota. That is 950 miles. So they're offering you a job that's nine, and that's not counting tolls, you know, but you get just the gas to get there. 950 miles away. 15 hours and 8 minutes. So a two-day drive, which means just basically sleeping in your car on the way. If you don't know somebody on the route, you're sleeping in your car, unless you got money for a hotel. So yeah, you're like, okay, well, what about relocation? Oftentimes these radio gigs, if they're bringing you in from out of state, you know, they'll throw you a couple of grand. And she was like, well, we're not going to give you any relocation. We want you to uproot your life and move to the middle of South Dakota. And if it doesn't work out, oh well. So I told him to shove it. And I ended up in Idaho for a few months. And the people in Idaho told me to shove it. Because that also happens in radio. It's kind of like, this is the best way I can, and you know, people who've not been in the radio business, it's sometimes difficult for people to really comprehend how it really works. But think of it like this. Think of it as a, like online dating. But instead of going out and, you don't get the opportunity to go out on some dates and maybe feel things out. It's kind of, you're all in or not. Imagine that. Imagine that for a second. That you get on, let's say, Plenty of Fish. And you have a chat with somebody via text, maybe a few emails. Maybe you have a phone call or two with them. And based on the strength of those few emails, a phone call or two, now you're going to have that person come live with you. That may not work out. You don't know. May not work out. You may have the person move in and you may love it, and they may decide that they got catfished, or the other way around, you know. And then shit just kind of goes south. In the case of Idaho, I think we both felt a little catfished. I felt a little catfished. I'm sure they felt a little catfished. And within a couple of months, they were like, yeah, this isn't really going to work out. You need to go. So I found myself completely unemployed in Idaho, of all places. And essentially enough money for me to survive for another month. Because let me tell you, guys on radio don't exactly have a whole lot of savings, right? So, I mean, I guess as a kid, I used to think that, you know, WKRP in Cincinnati was just the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my life. And, you know, I always thought being the good doctor would be the coolest. He was just the coolest guy. Johnny Fever from WKRP in Cincinnati. I thought he was just the coolest fucking dude. And I've aside from the cocaine habit, I've essentially lived that lifestyle for a lot of years. Up and, you know, packing and unpacking, up and down the dial, that sort of thing. So I got a hold of the people in Watertown, and I said, hey, that job's still open. I'm a lot closer to you. I am unemployed, and you know what? I've got gas money this time. So they put me up in a hotel. They said, well, we'll put you up in a hotel. Come on out. You got the job. So I took it. And that's how I ended up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, with the idea that I was only going to stay in South Dakota long enough to find a better job, and then I was going to be the fuck out of here. And that was almost 10 years ago. I did 2 years there, and I've been going on 8 years in the largest city in the state, I should mention, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And 2 years here on KBAD, which is what brought me here, and then the rest of the time doing this, the K-Bank thing. And in that time, I've made a lot of friends. I've had a lot of crazy experiences that I never in a million years would have guessed would happen in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, of all places. You know, hanging out with the guys in Disturbed and Kiss and meeting Rick Springfield and, you know, Mark Slaughter. Sometimes it just doesn't even seem real. Queensryche. In Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Not during bike week, not during any kind of just a random Thursday. You know, here's Tom Kiefer from Cinderella just hanging out with you. Stephen Piercy of Rat. So I've had a lot of great experiences here, and I've made some friends. One of those friends called me today. And I'm not going to out him by name, but I love this guy dearly. Just a genuinely cool guy that I met a few years ago. And he calls me today to say that he has cancer. And it's not a phone call that I've ever, I can't say as though I've ever really had a person that I just really, really loved like that to call and say, hey, okay, guess what? By the way, I've got, found out I got cancer. I'm going to share the story tonight because his story, first of all, it's not awful cancer. I mean, not that there's a good kind of cancer, but they found it early. And the reason I'm sharing the story, I'm not going to share his name. And that's, you know, and he told me, I haven't told a lot of people, but you were on the short list of people that I wanted to say. So I'm not going to out the guy, but it is... it's a story I felt like I would share anonymously because it could help some other. It might be able to save another life. So dude was a smoker for many years, as I was, as a lot of people listening were smokers for a lot of years. And I was not aware of this because I am not 50 yet. But it turns out that if you're over 50 years old, and if at any point in your life you smoked, let's say, a pack a day for 20 years or two packs a day for 10 years, if you were a smoker and a heavy, you know, or, you know, more than just a casual cigarette here and there kind of a smoker, and you're over the age of 50, they want you to get, well, if you have been a smoker, or currently are a smoker. Well, the breakdown is exactly this. Have you smoked a pack a day for 20 years or two packs a day for 10 years? That equivalent of smoking. Have you done that much smoking, yes or no? If yes, the next question is, are you currently still smoking, or has your last cigarette been within the last 15 years? Yes or no? And if it's yes, then are you 50, between the ages of 50 and 80? And if the answer is yes, then to all three of those things, then you're supposed to get this lung scan thing once a year just to check to see if the old cancer is going to creep up because you're considered to be high risk. So dude was a smoker for many years. He's currently like 59, 60 years old. And he... you know, he quit smoking like maybe 5 or 6 years ago. So he falls in that frame. So he, I guess last year did a scan and it was all clear. And he didn't said he didn't have any kind of real symptoms or anything necessarily other than carrying groceries or something in the house now and then. He'd feel a little winded and thought, well, shit, I need to just, you know, I need to get in shape. I'm too fat. I need to lose weight, you know, but all of us have been there a time or two, I would think. Maybe not NASA. I've never seen NASA, but I would imagine NASA's one of these slim, good body dudes. NASA's like one of those heroin. I picture NASA as being one of those heroin chic guys. You know what I mean? Like runs around topless, could probably smoke till he's 105, has a glass of wine, slim. This is what I imagine in my. It's not based on anything. Other than he likes to race motorcycles, and you rarely see a fat guy on a road racing motorcycle. It's not really a fat guy sport. Like, I love those bikes, but I've got a bit of a round belly. And when you hop on one of those bikes and you look a little silly. Unless you're, you know, slender. That's why fat guys usually ride Harley-Davidson. They ride cruisers. Maybe not a Harley-Davidson, but you know, one of those metric cruisers or something. Because you sit back a little bit and you can, you know, maybe get the ape hangers and you know, you don't have to. Anyway. So because I'd asked him, I said, well, you're having any symptoms? Was that what brought you in to get to, were you coughing up blood? You know, how bad was it? He said, no, I every now and then get a little lightheaded when I'm carrying stuff around. But I figured it's just because I'm getting old and I'm fat and whatever. So he goes in for this annual scan. And this time it pops up that he's got a few spots in each lung. Like one lung has got one spot and another lung has got two spots. Or maybe one lung has two and the other one has three. What? It doesn't make a difference. They're little spots. He said that the doctors told him that they were like eraser size, eraser tip. So not big, but really any kind of stuff like that in your lungs you probably don't want to have in there. I still like to believe maybe he just got a little overzealous with a cheeseburger and inhaled some chunks. Anyway, he's got to go in for some more testing or whatever. But it was one of those kind of bell-ringing moments where you think for a split second. These are the things that immediately run through my mind. First of all, I love this guy. I mean, in a platonic way, you know, but I fucking love this guy. This guy is just one of those genuine people. I'd love this dude. We don't hang out daily. You know, we don't really hang out at all, but he's not much of a hangout guy, and neither am I. We have done some stuff, you know, in the past. And he's just a really good. I would miss this guy if he were gone. So that's the first thing that runs through my mind. Then, of course, the second thing that runs through my mind is, like, holy shit, do I need to go get scanned? So that's when I started putting pen to paper, because I smoked for a lot of years. And then finally, I just decided that I'm fucking tired of cigarettes. I'm tired of being out of cigarettes and having to run into town to get a pack. I'm tired of being nicotine's bitch. And I had tried to quit many years prior to that, you know, off and on, and half-hearted attempts, or, you know, you'd have a little health scare, and you think, you know what, that's it, I'm going to quit smoking. That happened to me in Florida. I was in my early 20s. And I had a full-on, like, fucking panic attack. And I was in the midst of this panic, and I didn't recognize it as a panic attack at the moment. I genuinely thought I was fucking dying. And you make those kinds of pledges to whoever might be listening, you know, the great spooky man in the sky. Hey, if you get me through this, I'm gonna stop banging strippers. I'm gonna quit smoking pot. I'm gonna quit smoking cigarettes. I'm not gonna drink anymore. I'm gonna go to church. I'm gonna do all this shit. You know, all these things go through your head. You start saying these things, and then you probably have a week or two where you follow through with all the stuff you said you swore you were gonna do. And you just kind of slip back into your old ways. Dieting's the same way. You tell yourself, you know what? this time I'm going to diet. And maybe you half-heartedly stick to it for a little bit. Maybe you start seeing some results. Maybe you start feeling better, and then you just kind of slide back into those old habits. Next thing you know, wham! You've gained back every pound that you lost, and you're chain-smoking. And it didn't hurt, or it didn't help, I should say, that I loved everything there was to love about smoking. But I did eventually, it was in my early 30s. And I just got completely tired of being, and then I read somewhere that people who smoke, and this again, this is 15 some odd years ago. But I was reading all these things about people who smoke and the demographic, the people who cigarette, you know, smoke cigarettes. The smoke tobacco and smokeless tobacco, the kinds of people they are. And I had in my head, I don't want to be associated with this group of people. Now, not everybody. I'm sure you've got well-educated doctors and lawyers that smoke. But by and large, it's not generally the most intelligent among us that are smoking in the 21st century. Because we all know how bad it is for you. And the juice really isn't worth the squeeze unless you're hooked. Like if you ask a heroin or a crackhead, is it worth it? They're going to tell you absolutely. Because they're fucking hooked. You know, they are addicts. And an addict is going to tell you every time that the juice is worth the squeeze. Until they realize it's not. And that's, I think, every addict, no matter what you're addicted to, could be food, pussy, whatever it is you're addicted to, whatever your vice is, gambling, whatever that vice is, you have to come to that realization that it's just, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. And that's when you're ready to step away. And I was finally at that point with cigarette smoking, and I would venture to say that my friend, a little later in his life than I was, but, you know, in his mid-50s, I was in my early 30s, he smoked until he was in his mid-50s, but then decided, you know what, it's time for me to hang this up. And, yeah. So I start thinking about how this relates to me, and I'm not yet 50, so I guess I don't fall into that annual screening deal, and by the time I am 50, which will be later this year, it will have been more than 15 years since I quit smoking. So technically, I wouldn't be one of those high risk people. And I mean, it feels good for me to say, whew, I'm in the non. It doesn't mean I'm clear. Fuck, there are people who've never smoked in their life who end up with lung cancer. So it doesn't mean that anybody's really clear, but somebody says, hey, Frank, thanks for doing the show tonight. How about Jack Russell's Great White, Once Bitten, Twice Shy, live at the Badlands? Well, we'll play that when we wrap up tonight. So anyway, I heard from my friend today that he's... And it sounds like that, you know, he's got more doctors and people to consult and more tests and et cetera, et cetera. As I was reading after I got off the phone with him, I was reading a little more on the subject. And it turns out that there are false positives. That oftentimes people get these scans and it comes up and they think someone's got cancer and it turns out not to be. Or it is something that they don't even have to fool with. Whatever that means. I would think any kind of cancer would be not cool, but I'm not a cancer doctor. I don't know. But, I am just thankful. I am thankful to whichever deity you subscribe that my friend had this found out early, and it sounds like they're going to, pending the results of whatever tests he's still got to do, that they'll just give him some chemotherapy. And I'm not trying to make that sound like a walk in the park. I understand it. For a lot of people, it's not. But, I try to make some jokes with him, you know. But I make jokes because I'm probably more freaked out about it than he is. because I really, if I can say this without sounding like a complete asshole, I don't like a lot of humans. I just don't. I don't wish them harm. There's not many humans that I want to, you know, let into my bubble. And this fellow was one of those people that I let into my bubble. He's bubble worthy. So most people, you know, oh, you'll see a wave. Hi, how you doing? You know, you shoot the shit with them, whatever. But they're not really bubble people. They're stay outside of my bubble people. You run into a few of them now and then, a handful. They're scarcer than hen's teeth, as my daddy used to say. But, yeah. So, anyway, they found this early, and then hopefully it'll be a quick boom, 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 and it'll clear him up, and he'll be all good to go. And that's the hope. But I share the story this evening just because, hey, if you're one of these people that's in this, I didn't even know this regular lung scan thing was a thing. Had no idea. They always seem to ask me when I get checkups, do you smoke? No. Have you ever smoked? Yeah, but it's been a long time. Well, how long ago would you say? Well, I had to send a message to my ex-wife and say, hey, when did I move back there? Because I had been smoke-free for about 8 months, 8 or 9 months when I moved back to the Buckeye. I was living in Nebraska. And it just walked me down that whole progression of my life. You know, the every day you're at a crossroads. You know, you're at the fork in the road. Every day, are you going to go left? Are you going to go right? Are you going to go up? Are you going to go down? Where are you going to go? And all of these seemingly, you know, benign decisions that you make ultimately choose the path in life that you take and where you end up. There have been many times that I've kind of regretted leaving where I was living in Nebraska and going back to Ohio, because there was a lot of good that I was able to have a bit of a relationship with my two of my daughters that were living in Ohio. They were still younger, and I was, you know, we hung out and had great times, and we went to Cedar Point, and we, you know, I got to actually be a dad to them for a brief period of time. And then, you know, I had to get a job. I had to, you know, the work dried up there, and I had to go find money. And my chosen profession, that meant I had to go where the job was. And I remember not wanting to leave. And I applied for a lot of jobs, and I had a lot of interviews that I thought were really strong interviews, not radio gigs, but completely unrelated. I remember there was this is a funny story I'll share. There was an ad in a newspaper or something for the Goodwill. The Goodwill is, in a lot of places, are owned by private corporations. Like they break it out into like regions and they basically operate like a franchisee, if you will, of the Goodwill, under the Goodwill umbrella. And there's different branches of these. Anyway, so there was one of these Goodwill operations, and they were looking for, they had a job fair. And at this point, I was working part-time at a little AM radio station, picking up every hour I could get, but I was running out of money quickly. And I needed a real full-time gig, doing anything. Ideally, I would have found a full-time gig and then kept my part-time gig doing this radio thing. But I was discovering quickly that I had really screwed the pooch financially, screwed myself by quitting my lucrative job to chase my radio dream. My little one-day-a-week AM radio thing. But again, it goes back to that. You find something that you love, and that became my vice. That became my fix, you know, addict, if you will. So I go to that because I thought, Jesus Christ, I could work at a Goodwill. And not to demean the people who work at Goodwill, but I thought, I'm a guy of reasonable intelligence. I don't know that a PhD is required to staff a Goodwill. I wasn't even looking for a manager gig. I just give me a job that pays something full time, maybe some benefits, and I would be like, whatever. And I love thrift shops, so I'm like, fuck, this would be great. So I go in, and they had all these different positions, and they were like really hungry for people. And usually when a place like that has a job fair just for that business, they are hungry for people. And I know how to do a lot of things. Like, I know how to drive a forklift. I thought, fuck, I could drive a forklift. I'll drive the forklift. So I'm filling out these things, and they're, like, checking the boxes for things I know how to do. And this lady says, are you a radio DJ? I said, yeah. She says, oh, my God, I listen to your show all the time. I said, well, that's cool. It doesn't pay the bills, though. She said, ah, we're going to move you over to this other. We want you to talk to, I don't know. Let's call her Darlene. So we go talk to this Darlene chick. And I just charm the pants off this Darlene chick. And she's like, oh, my God, I got the great, I've got a, we got a store manager opening. You'd be perfect for this. And I thought, there we go. Hey, I could be the manager of a Goodwill. What a great gig that would be. You know, I like junk. That's okay. So I go through like four or five of these interviews, and everybody was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. So finally this lady, I get to the grand poobah, this gal, and I have a great interview with her. And she's like, man, I love everything about you. This is fantastic. Here, look, she says to me, I can't believe you even want this job. That's what she said to me. She's like, why would you even want this job? And I told her, I said, well, because first of all, I love thrift store stuff. I've always reveled in the whole thrift store thing. I love treasures. And I need money. That's it. And she's like, level with me. Could you pass a drug test? I said, could I pass a drug test? Absolutely. I don't even use caffeine. Absolutely. I could pass a drug test. I could pass a background check. I could pass whatever you want to throw at me. Absolutely. Let's do it. So she says, here's what I want to do. I want to send you to this one store, and I want you to just check it out. Hang out for an afternoon and see what you think. And then give me a call. She wanted me to dip my toes in the proverbial water and actually get a glimpse at the behind-the-scenes operations. And I think maybe this is where I fucked up. I might have swung my dick a little hard in this thing. So I'm helping out in this, people would pull in, ding, 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 and you're like, hi, and you greet the people, and you take their old moldy shit out of their car, and you put it in the basket, and you give them a little slip that says, that they made a donation to the Goodwill, and you move the stuff in the back room, and you got people sorting stuff. And I'm shooting a shit with this guy, and, I seemed okay. But we go in the back. And on the top of this, and it was a big mountain of stuff, clothes and just random stuff just kind of tossed in this huge pile in this back room. And at the very tippy top of this pile was a fucking chemical toilet. A chemical toilet. Now, if you don't know what a chemical toilet is, you've probably never gone camping. But it's this squatty looking, maybe 2.5-3 foot high, maybe not even two feet high. And it looks like a, I guess it could look like a cooler. But you lift the lid and you shit in it. And then you pull the drain or the little lever out and whatever you pee or poop goes down in the thing. And then it's got a little accordion thing you squeeze to blow the chemical toilet stuff in there to wash down whatever stuck to the bowl. It's a chemical toilet, a camp toilet, whatever you want to call it. And it's at the top of this pile of stuff. And it's fucking leaking. And I say to the guy, I ain't trying to tell you how to do your job. But maybe the top of this pile is not the best place for the chemical toilet. He says, what are you talking about? I said, the chemical toilet on the top of that. He says, that's a cooler. I said, that's not a cooler. That's a chemical toilet. And it's leaking. I don't know what it's leaking, but it's leaking out of a toilet. He says, no. That's a cooler. I said, okay, let's pretend for a moment it is a cooler. It's still leaking. It's undeniable. There's shit oozing out of that cooler all over everything that's below it, which is essentially everything in that pile. Well, it's fine, the guy says. How do you mean that's fine? It's a fucking chemical toilet leaking God only knows what. I mean, what would be in a chemical toilet? Your options are the chemicals or human waste. So I'm like, well, whatever then, dude. So then that guy goes off to do something else, and somebody else had asked me, so what do you think of the job? I said, well, it seems pretty cool, but I couldn't get that stuck. Because it was so blatantly wrong. You know, you ever been someplace or in a situation where something was so blatantly wrong? You couldn't just ignore it and walk away. What I was supposed to do was ignore. And now I wonder if maybe that wasn't a test. Maybe they wanted to see if I was willing to. I couldn't let it go. Because I couldn't help but think all of these people donated their stuff, right, to this business. And let's be honest, they're not washing anything in the Goodwill. You donate clothes, people take the clothes and they put it on a hook and they hang it out the same way they got it. And if it's funky, they just throw it out. Because they're not going to wash any of this stuff and they don't want their whole place smelling like a chemical. But here's a chemical toilet leaking over a bunch of this stuff, which, probably 60% of it was garbage anyway. But then the rest of the stuff is stuff they can sell. So this is their profit. Getting chemical toileted on. So anyway, so this another guy, I was talking to him. He's like, what? I said, yeah, that's a chemical toilet. He says, really? He climbs up the pile. He lifts the lid. He says, I'll be goddamn, there's a turd in here. That's what he says out loud. There's a turd in here. They brought the chemical toilet down. It was leaking all over him. Then it came apart. Because you may not know this, but a chemical toilet, the part you sit on, actually, if you yank another lever, that part detaches. So you can, and then there's the drain that kind of cranks out. It swings out like an arm. So if you go to dump the chemical toilet, you don't have to carry the whole chemical toilet. You just, I think the top part might actually have the clean water. Maybe they call that brown water. It's not drinkable, but it's the water you use to flush whatever you. So the top part of it might have the chemicals and stuff, and that detaches from the catched thing in the bottom. Well, the two pieces were coming apart, and it was making an even bigger mess. So who knows? But I get back home that night, and I take a very long, hot shower, and I call the gal and say, hey, you know what? I did that. I met up with those guys. I hung out with them for the afternoon. I am delighted to take that gig. Let me know what the next step is. And they fucking ghosted me. They completely ghosted me. I called that woman back like 7 or 8 times. Sent her countless emails. Like before that, boom, 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 boom. Everything was bam, bam, you know. But then as soon as I got done with that, and what always irritated me about that was, look, if you don't want to hire me, that's fine. Then just tell me, look. I just don't think it's a right. I just don't think it's a good fit. And sure, I'm going to say, well, do you mind if I ask why? Because I am remotely curious. I think just to keep from having that awkward conversation, they decide they don't want you anymore. And then it just poof. You're dead to them. I think it's one of the reasons I don't like humans. If you don't want to hang out with me, you don't think I'm a right fit for the gig. Well, then just tell me that. Say, look, I don't know. The guys that I talked to said that you were a dick. And then I would have told them what I just told you. Well, I don't know why they would say that other than I insisted that a chemical toilet was actually a chemical toilet. Didn't mean to ruffle any feathers, but, you know, as a potential employee, I kind of, you know, I'm looking for an opportunity to show my worth and value to the company. And if I can come out as just a job shadow and save you guys, you know, save your inventory, I think I've just exhibited that I would be a decent employee. But what you learn is human beings don't like people that make them look bad. And I think that's essentially what I did. I showed up and made it quite obvious that the people that were running that particular Goodwill store were, at best, not very good at their job. And who likes that guy, you know? And that's the balance. You have to weigh the, do you do the right thing versus what's going to shoot me in the foot? And I tend to lean towards right thing, shoot myself in the foot, no good deed goes unpunished side of the equation than the, I'm going to look out for myself and just fuck it, whatever. So, anyway, that was my experience there. Because I looked in earnest for a night. And I just, everything I interviewed for, every now and then you'd have somebody who'd say, you know, we would hire you, but it's clear where your real heart is in radio. And our fear is that you're only going to stick around long enough until a good radio gig comes along and you'll be gone. And what I've learned over the years is the people, the non-radio people, think I'm way better at my job than the radio people. That's the non-radio people think I must be incredible on the air. And the actual radio people are like, nah, this guy sucks. So that's kind of the purgatory, career purgatory I find myself in. And I suppose if I'm being honest, when I was offered that gig in Utah, a big part of that, you know, my experiences with, I was offered about a year before KBAD went, I could tell that things were going in the toilet with KBAD. And I start sending resumes out. And I had an outfit in St. George, Utah fly me out there. And I really did love everything about the market and the people and everybody in the building was awesome. I had a really nice conversation with a gal that worked in their traffic department about cardinals and birds. Fascinating. You know, they don't have cardinals there. Cardinals apparently don't get that far out to that far west. Anyway, they offered me the job, and I said, sure, I'll take it. Let's sign a contract. And they weren't going to sign a contract. And I thought, man, the last thing I want to do is quit, because I had at the time, I still had a job. KBAD was still on the air. I didn't want to quit that job, pack my shit up, move to Utah just to find out that I would be fucking unemployed in 6 months when they decided it wasn't working out. I wanted some kind of at least a mattress to fall on, you know? Let's agree that if you decide you don't want me after 6 months, then you pay me out for the rest of my contract and we part ways. And then I agree that I don't bail on you in 3 months if I find a better gig, that I will stay for, you know, 12 months. Give me that. But they were like, yeah, nobody here has a contract. We're not doing that. And I'm like, dude, you got to be crazy. What, huh? In radio, you can't even get an advertiser on without having them sign a contract for at least 3 months. Radio stations aren't interested in taking your money for 30 days. They spent all that time getting you to say yes. They want to lock you in for a minimum of 90 days, oftentimes 6 months. And they'll give you some bullshit. Well, it takes 6 months for you really to see results. We'd hate for you to bail on it too early. So they sign you, they lock you into these, you know, commitments. So radio wants to sign contracts with all the advertisers, but their own employees, they don't give a shit. And in my head, I think that that tells you all you need to know about how those corporations feel about people. They want you to work your ass off for them. I saw a thing on Facebook. It was a posting. It didn't say where the place was. It was some, I don't know, could have been a restaurant, hard to say. But it was like, if you're going to work here, you have to leave your cell phone on at all times. And if Gary calls you, whoever Gary was, probably some manager, you have to answer. If Gary calls you, you have to answer. And you have to leave your phone on all the time. And all these things you have to do. Even if you're not scheduled, if you're asked to come in, you need to come in. You are required whenever Gary calls you. And I thought to myself, you know, that'd be great, except for, you know, if Gary decides he wants to fire you, your ass is gone. These corporations and these businesses expect all of this stuff from these employees. But when they want to get, you know, cut themselves, divest themselves from the workforce, they just flick their finger and fucking you're gone. Psh, fuck off. Meanwhile, there are a lot of people in a lot of businesses. And I've met these people over the years that work in restaurants and they work in retail. And they really consider their coworkers like family. And they genuinely care. They genuinely care about the success of the company. And they work their asses off and they stay awake at night, you know, having bad dreams and tossing and turning about the next day and, oh no, the truck's coming and we got all these clusters, you know. Their whole lives, they're in a fucking ball of nerves over some job that pays them barely enough to survive. And then one day, you know, that job just tells them, oh yeah, by the way, we're closing. Goodbye. See ya. And then they wonder why these jobs have such a hard time staffing people nowadays. Or you end up like people, the Cleveland situation, where this woman was foaming at the mouth. Why, you know, I'm answering. Like, as soon as I emailed her, she was right back, right back, right back. And then suddenly, bloop, whew, gone. Fart in the wind. Thank you, Frank, for choosing this topic. Every organ has the ability of getting cancer due to many dozens of random environmental factors. I'm glad he found his so early and recognized he was at risk. My two types of cancer I've survived have both. I'm going to have to open this now. I probably have to go through and delete a bunch of these messages because I think it's slowing this thing down. My two types of cancer I've survived have both successfully been treated and luckily caught early enough to do minimal damage. Neither of mine have had anything that would be linked back to a specific instance, habit, or exposure. My best advice is exactly what he did. Know your habits, your daily way you feel and operate. When those start changing and you don't feel normal, go get checked. If they don't find anything, be persistent. Get second opinions. It took over a year before someone finally recognized my kidney cancer. Uh, 7:09 p.m., someone writes, what do you call a single radio DJ? I don't know. What do you call a single radio DJ? Used to be a drummer. There used to be a joke about drummers. What do you call a single drummer? And then the answer was homeless. What do you call a single drummer? Homeless. So then he says, if you're midichlorian, probably butchering that because I'm not a doctor. If your midichlorians are too high, boom. I don't know why this fucking thing is. This started on me during the show this morning. This, because I have not deleted any message I've gotten in the last 4 years on this thing. It's been 4+ years I've been receiving texts on this thing. Yeah, homeless. It was the same joke. What do you call a single radio DJ? Homeless. I go, that's not true, though. I've been a single man in radio for a lot of years, and I think I've only really been homeless, like genuinely nowhere else to go homeless, twice in my life. And I don't think I was doing radio then. Yeah. Although, I guess, to be honest, I've never met a homeless drummer either. Anyway. 11:45, somebody had a late entry for the Crazy Frank Outdoor story of the day. Speaking of homes and homeless and whatnot, I think that's one of the reasons why I like having that RV. No matter what happens, I could always live in that. You know? And with houses selling for... I was looking at some housing listings had popped up the other day, and I was looking at them, and, you know, the ridiculous amount of money they want for these tiny-ass little houses. I'm thinking, you know what? A fucking RV is almost nicer than some of these houses. If that RV was a house, it'd be worth $20,000. No kidding. If that RV was parked at a fucking trailer court, it would be a $20,000 house. It's got air conditioning. It's a one bedroom with a kitchenette. That RV would be worth $20,000 if it were parked in a... I wonder if I could just park that in a trailer court. Might be something to look into. You'd have to winterize the bottom of it to keep it from... Hey, Frank, I'm listening tonight. I heard you mention me. Ha! I sent several emails with songs attached. Sorry for flooding your inbox. Not a smoker and never have been. And I addressed that in one of my emails. Anyway, many thanks. Mi amigo. Oh, this has got to be NASA. Oh, keep the text, but delete the objects and images embedded in them. That's where most of the size is. Oh, there's objects and images embedded in his emails? Now I gotta know. I wonder where he sent them. Oh, here they are. Where are the objects? This is a saw. Delete the objects. Yeah. Anyway. So, we got the Devil's Jukebox tomorrow. If you've not checked that out, a lot of people seem to enjoy that. The Devil's Jukebox at 2 o'clock, Fridays. Anything goes. We'll likely be doing the Devil's Jukebox a little different. I think I'm going to do an official commercial break at the end of the first hour, into the second hour. And put the commercials back in the Devil's Jukebox like we do a normal show. So we'll do it from 2 to 2:55 and then do a commercial break and then do it from when we come back to 3:55. Do another commercial break. As to Crazy Frank Live, unless something drastic changes between now and the end of February, I think I'm going to start rolling this up. I don't know that I'm going to keep doing the Crazy Frank Live. Largely because it's not really developed into anything. I told myself I was going to do it for a year, and we've done it for a year. I guess I kept hoping that there would be some sort of incentive to keep doing it. Maybe somebody would want to sponsor it, or maybe we'd... have enough downloads that, you know, we would, but it's thus far, it's not really, you know, I can't really blame anybody because what is it? It's just me rattling on for an hour. But I'm not entirely convinced. I mean, I could be spending this hour with my daughter, Ava. I think that's what I keep coming back to. Like tonight, she wanted me to lift Lando. Lando Calpupian, our black labradoodle. I was trying to encourage her to finish eating her dinner, clean her plate. And I said, don't you want to grow up big and strong? And she said, yeah. I said, if you get big and strong, you'll be able to pick up Lando. Lando's like 80 pounds, mostly leg, but he's a good 80-pound dog. And she said, what? I said, I could lift up Lando. Oh, I want you to lift him. So I said, if you clean your plate, I'll lift Lando up and, you know, just like feats of strength. Lando doesn't really care for it. He's okay once you get him up off the ground. But that the mount and dismount, he gets a little, ooh, shit, am I going to get dropped here? But once I get him up, he's all like, yeah, this is okay. Because, you know, labradoodles are not really the kind of dogs you carry around. But that's why it's funny. And so I find myself increasingly, you know, when it comes time to come down and do the Crazy Frank Live thing, I think I'd really rather spend this time with my daughter. And you'd have to give me a good, like even karaoke, when I do karaoke, like 2 weekends a month, man, I don't like leaving. I don't like going to do it. Because I would rather be home with the gooch. And this is time I'm not going to get back. So it's got to have a real good, I got to have a real good reason to keep doing this. And at present, I don't. It's, you know, some days I don't know that any of them have been bad. Doing the show, it's not that I mind doing the show, it's just I you know, it gets to be in the evening, I want to sit on the couch and hang out with my daughter. And I know a lot of folks can't do that, and I know for a lot of my kids I did not do that because I was busy doing other things for other people. And I suppose at this point in my life, what I want to do is hang out with my little girl. So, unless something changes drastically between now and the last Thursday of this month, we're probably going to have, you know, and I'll probably do it periodically. You know, you know what? I'm going to do it again tonight, and I'm going to, you know, but it won't be I don't think it's going to be a regular thing anymore after this month. And, of course, the final Devil's Jukebox will be the last Friday of February, and then we'll reassess. We'll see if those guys want to continue to sponsor it, and we'll see what the audience thinks. We'll let the audience decide ultimately, because just like the music we play, we'll let the audience decide whether or not we're going to keep doing the Devil's Jukebox. It is, a lot of people seem to like it. The challenge with this is that it gets very expensive, because we're playing anything that anybody asks for. And at $1.29, and I get that our good friend Bootalicious has been sending money for this. But I'm trying to be fair to him, too. You know, because I consider Bootalicious, I'm going to give him the gong here. I consider him a friend, too. You know, I don't want to take advantage of his friendship. And he likes it. I get that he likes it. But, you know, he does it as a thing for New Era Steel. I guess I don't know how many people are listening to the Devil's Jukebox that are like, ooh, I need some custom metal fabrication. I don't want to say there aren't anybody, but or any people, but you know, I think what I've charged him for his hour sponsorship of it is fair. But I think the guy's probably close to $300 into it just for buying music. You know, with iTunes cards. So, we'll let the audience decide, and we may have to adjust. We may have to come up with a new way for deciding what gets played on the Devil's Jukebox to make it a little less of a money hemorrhaging thing. I think that's what I'm coming back to. We really seem to be hemorrhaging cash with the Devil's Jukebox. It's a money pit. It's what it is. And I know I shouldn't care because it's not my money, but it's my friend's money, you see. That's where I'm at with that. So, yeah. That's the State of the Union there, and it's not really a well-thought-out thing, but nothing I say on this program is necessarily well-thought-out. But I do enjoy the Devil's Jukebox. I like the eclectic mix of music. I would like to see it continue. I don't know that we need to bang through 29 songs a show. I think we can pace it a little bit. And I think we should find a way to weight what gets played, you know? Like, maybe what we do is we have, maybe what I do is I need to add more work to it. But let's say, for the sake of argument, I build a website where people can go and submit the songs they want to hear for the Devil's Jukebox. And then people somehow can vote on those. And based on the voting, those are the songs we play. Maybe that's what we need to do with it. Because here's the other thing. It becomes a quick of the draw thing. I've been just playing the music in the order it's received. And that means some people who don't get their requests in until, you know, I don't know, 15 minutes after 2 are never going to hear their request. So then those people don't even get represented. So how do we represent everybody's interests? How do we make it fair? Aside from first come, first serve. Because some people are just slow. Many questions. I might have opened Pandora's box with that. But the listeners largely seem to enjoy it. We do have some. It's kind of like that halftime Super Bowl show. They have that that gal was singing. And, well, a lot of these people never like the halftime Super Bowl show. But you have these people who bitch and complain about the Super Bowl halftime show. I think are largely the same people who bitch about the Devil's Jukebox for that 2 hours. And I get that that's a very small sliver of the audience. And I understand that you can't make everybody happy. But there is a bit of me that kind of wishes I, you know. Anyway, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Tots and pears to my good friend, who I will not name, who came down with the big C. That he will pop out of the other end of this thing, you know, no worse for wear. And I'll be back bright and early tomorrow at 9 a.m. when we do a regular installment of the show. So with that said, we've got Jack Russell's Great White, Once Bitten, Twice Shy, live from the Badlands. Coming up right after we sign off here. Hopefully you'll stick around for that. And any other requests I see before I pop out of the studio, I'll drop in the stack. But with that, I bid you adieu. Have a nice evening, everybody, and I'll see you bright and early tomorrow. See you. Times again.